Today, I want to pose the question, what does every pilot need to do to stay alive that you also need to do to help save lives? But first up, a warning. This talk is not intended just to tickle your ears or stimulate you intellectually. It's intended to result in action. You have been warned. That was my stern voice, by the way. I love science. For me, it was really exciting when I began to discover that science had not disproved the Bible and, in fact, supports what's written in it. All it took was access to good information. So while not formally trained as a scientist, I've been an avid user of science, especially physics, in a context where getting it wrong can have really serious consequences. So I'm referring to my involvement in aviation, which, as Doug said, has included the maintenance of big aeroplanes, specifically jet engines, as an aircraft engineer for 40 years now. We like to say that without us, it's just a big glider. And flying small ones as a hobby for a bit less than that. But today I'm representing a global organization called Creation Ministries International, which exists to build the faith of Christians, to give them confidence in God's word, and to encourage them in sharing their faith with others. We describe this as arming God's army, and we're effectively an information ministry to the church. We focus on the Bible, and in particular the book of Genesis at the beginning, because this is the book most under attack by those seeking to discredit the Bible. And the greatest weapon in that attack has been the theory of evolution. So today I want to look at three things in this first session. Firstly, I want to look at why this issue actually does matter. Secondly, we'll look at some evidence supporting the creation account. And thirdly, what we can do to make a difference. So back to aviation. Flying is an incredible privilege that allowed me to do some really fun things like this. But stalling an aircraft is very different to stalling a car. It can result in a spin, which unnerves some passengers because they end up pointing straight at the ground, going round and round. But it's a perfectly safe maneuver if it's carried out at altitude. And that was on purpose, by the way. But aviation isn't all fun and games. Pilots do have to make some tough decisions at times, like this guy. On the one hand, it was a $20 million aircraft. On the other hand, the spider was inside the cockpit. And flying also comes with a warning. It's highly addictive. My wife will tell you that I spend way too much time looking skyward and wishing I was up there. But up there isn't always a good place to be. There is a truism in aviation that says it's better to be down here wishing you were up there than to be up there wishing you're down here. That's very true. The chances are, if you find yourself up there wishing you were down here, it's because of something you didn't do or you didn't know before you even took off. It's highly likely that it's because you weren't fully prepared or equipped in some way. A pilot must prepare in advance for every expected part of the flight ahead, but also for the unexpected things that may occur. It's no use finding yourself in the middle of an unexpected spin and then trying to read the flight manual to find out how to get out of a spin. That's not going to end well. You need to have done that ahead of time. It's all about preparation. Now, the same is true for all of us here today. We need to be prepared and equipped ahead of time. We all have conversations, hopefully, where people raise questions about Christianity and the Bible. How do you go when you're in that position? The Apostle Peter in the Bible has some advice for us in this regard, where he tells us to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. How well prepared are you? What will you say when your teenager comes home and says, "We learned all about evolution at school today and how it works"? Or your workmate says to you, "How can you deny evolution when the fossils prove it?" Or what if your neighbour asks you, "How can there be a God when there's so much suffering in the world?" Will you stammer something unconvincing and wish you were down there, not up here? Or will you respond confidently and intelligently? These conversations are great opportunities to have a real impact on someone's life. I want to tell you that it's possible to give solid answers that make sense, that cause non-Christian people to think, maybe it isn't all myth and wishful thinking after all. Maybe I should find out more. All you need is to get your hands on the right information, and you'll find that there are sensible answers to virtually every question or objection. So the first reason that the creation versus evolution issue matters is that we need to be prepared for conversations around this topic. We need to be able to defend our faith, not just so that we can feel more confident, but so that we can be fruitful and effective. We've been called to be salt and light in our world, to make a difference. And we're surrounded by lost people in desperate need of help and direction. Second reason that this discussion matters is that the Bible is under attack. The theory of evolution is the greatest and most successful attack on the Bible there has ever been. And we read daily in the media about the tragic results of abandoning the biblical worldview. Now, some, even in the church, think that the creation-evolution debate is a sideshow. It's not worth focusing on. But I want to tell you that for those outside the church looking in, it's not a side issue at all. It's very much what they're focused on. Evolution is the greatest reason given by people outside the church why they don't believe the Bible. And you may be surprised to learn that this issue affects the core message of the Bible. Salvation. Jesus' death on the cross, as we'll see later on. So don't let anyone tell you that this is a side issue. Another reason why this is important. I have a question for you. Where did you come from? I want to suggest to you that when you boil it all down, there are three really big questions that we all face regarding our time on this planet. The ultimate questions of life, if you like. Number one, where did I come from? What's my origin? Question number two, why am I here? What's my purpose in life? And number three, where am I going next? Or what happens when I die? I also want to suggest to you that your answers to questions two and three depend entirely on how you answer question one. If life started randomly and we evolved with no creator, then your time on this planet has no meaning, no ultimate purpose, and when you die, that's it. End of story. Job done. Our children are taught this worldview, and then we wonder why the youth suicide rate is so high. I'm sure you'll agree that it's tragic, but unsurprising. Following the Columbine High School massacre in 1999, the school superintendent asked why such an atrocity had occurred. Pastor and police chaplain Gino Geraci gave the following reply. He said, "You have taught our children that they come from nowhere, that that's where they're going, and that life is a point of pain in a meaningless existence." And they believed you. Am I drawing an unwarranted connection here between evolutionary teaching and horrific acts of violence? I don't think so. Creation Ministries article at the time highlighted how one of the killers wore a t-shirt emblazoned with natural selection, and that both young men were obsessed with Nazism and Darwinism. Our young people are not stupid. If we tell them that they are nothing more than rearranged pond scum, they will come to the entirely logical conclusion that they have no more value than pond scum, and they will act accordingly. And we're seeing this. The evolution issue matters. It's not just an interesting intellectual debate. Lives really are at stake. To put it another way, ideas have consequences, and bad ideas have bad consequences. So arguably, the question, where did I come from, is the most important question that we can ask. A little girl was facing this question, so she asked her father, "Where did the human race come from?" Her father answered, "God made Adam and Eve, they had children, their children had children, and all humans ultimately are descended from them." 2 days later, the little girl asked her mother the same question. And her mother answered, "Well, many years ago, the human race evolved from monkeys." The confused girl returned to her father and said, "Dad, I don't get it. You told me that God created the human race, and Mum says we evolved from monkeys." The father wisely answered, "Well, dear, it's very simple. I told you about my side of the family, and your mother told you about hers. Obviously not a real story, but if you were that father, could you give logical answers to your daughter, supporting your statement that God created humans with solid evidence? It really could impact her eternity. Can you see how our answer to the question, where did I come from, does matter? One final reason why this matters. I have some sobering information for you regarding our young people going off to university. You need to understand that university is far from neutral. Virtually every subject is toxic to Christianity. Australian Students for Christ, our chaplain, Craig Tasker, noted, "The institution's philosophy of education is secular humanism. Thus, students are bombarded with it in every lecture as the basic assumption. This constant brainwashing destroys the faith of many Christians each year." He says, "Our surveys indicate that 80% of first-year students believe in a God who is there. By their second year, only 15% believe in God." Fallout is a powerful DVD produced by Creation Ministries in which uni students in the USA were interviewed about the teaching they received as a young person. Every single student who said they were raised in the church but no longer attends church said they now believed evolution to be a scientific fact. The interview showed clearly that the majority of young people not exposed to creation teaching in their youth now embrace evolution and no longer attend church. Yet, listen to this, every student spoken to who was equipped with answers about evolution as a young person still retains their Christian convictions in spite of the evolutionary teaching they received in higher education. Better still, every single student spoken to who affirmed biblical creation still attends church regularly. It's a powerful DVD. I'll tell you a bit later on how you can get hold of a free copy. I'm really pleased to be able to tell you that we have a new resource specifically written to prepare our young people for going to university. This booklet is very cheap, $4.50, and in my opinion, it's essential reading for anyone at or heading to university. So, having established that this issue is important, how can we get prepared to respond to questions and challenges? How can we equip our families? Probably the easiest way is the free InfoBytes email newsletter produced by Creation Ministries. These regular emails keep you right up to date with the latest information and news. Did I mention that it's free? InfoBytes is not limited just to science-related topics, but addresses all sorts of recent news and topical issues. It's a great resource that costs you nothing. So if you'd like a regular supply of encouraging articles and biblical perspectives on the latest discoveries, please just add your details to the sign-up sheet that will circulate now. If you can add your postcode, we can tailor the information for your area, and your phone number helps us if the email address is illegible. It's that easy. You're getting equipped to make a difference. The other free resource is the Creation Ministries website. The web address couldn't be much easier to remember, creation.com. The amount of information you'll find there is staggering, and it has a great search engine. At creation.com, you'll find around 10,000 articles covering everything imaginable on the creation-evolution debate, as well as many articles supporting the Bible as God's Word. Around 700 video clips, many only about a minute long, and a new front page article every day, Monday through Saturday. And we now have resources in over 40 different languages. A teenage schoolgirl found she never had answers to her questions, but after finding our website, she says, "I was surprised to find the answers to the questions I'd been asking for over 10 years and literally the first day I was at your site. It helped me realize that true faith and intelligence aren't mutually exclusive." A few months later, I became a Christian. How awesome is that? The power of being informed. Now, just so that we're clear on what we're talking about today, I'm going to define the two histories that claim to tell us how we got to where we are now. The predominant view, popularized in almost all media and educational systems, tells us that it all started with a large bang, where nothing exploded and became everything. The earth, the universe, and all things came into their present form by a slow, gradual process of self-transformation with no designer or creator. Life originated spontaneously, and life forms gradually progressed from simple single-celled organisms to increasingly complex animals, culminating in you. Death and suffering have always been part of the process of biological improvement, according to this view. This is an important point we'll come back to later. On the other hand, according to the Bible, the universe was brought into being by God as a one-off supernatural process, resulting in a complete, functioning, balanced whole. The creation was initially very good, or perfect, with no death, disease, pain, or suffering. God created plants, animals, and people able to reproduce only within their own kinds. And humans were designed with purpose and created fully formed, intelligent, and creative from the beginning. After the fall, where Adam and Eve disregarded the only restriction they were given by God, the whole of creation was judged. Sin, death, disease, and suffering entered the picture for the first time. Since then, the whole universe has been winding down or descending into a state of increasing disorder. Then, as a result of the sinfulness of people, God judged the planet with a global flood, which destroyed all land-dwelling vertebrate animals and people, except for those on board a ship the size of an ocean liner, built by Noah. Not long after that, when the descendants of the ark survivors refused God's instruction to spread out and repopulate the whole earth, God introduced different languages among them, which forced them to move away from each other at the Tower of Babel. We have got a small-scale model of the ark that we'll just pass around today that just gives you some idea of the size and shape of it. Thanks, Mike. So having defined the two competing histories, you'll note that one of the most obvious differences between them is the time frames. Evolutionary history is completely harnessed to huge time frames. It requires gradual change over millions of years. The biblical time frame, on the other hand, is much shorter. The book of Genesis tells us that God completed all his work of creating in 6 earth rotation days. Now, of course, if he is who he says he is, he could have done it in 6 seconds, or instantly. But he chose to do it over 6 days. The writer of Genesis makes this crystal clear and really leaves no room for any alternative time frame. And 6 normal days also makes sense of Genesis as the basis for our working week as described in Exodus 20. It's worth noting that these verses are part of the Ten Commandments, and as such, these are words spoken directly by God. The Bible also gives us a timeline of world history. Around 1,650 years from creation until Noah's flood, and about 4,500 years since then. So how does the Bible do this? Well, genealogies can be added up to give us about 2,000 years from Adam until Abraham. Remember all those begats in the Bible you used to read when you're having trouble sleeping? Turns out they're there for a reason. Who'd have thought? So that gets us from Adam to Abraham. Then the Old Testament gives us enough detail about the reigns of kings and major events in the history of Israel to be able to calculate another 2,000 years until Jesus, and then finally 2,021 years since then. So where did the idea of millions of years of Earth history come from? Well, people looked at the huge depth of sedimentary layers in the Earth's crust and assumed that the layers must have been laid down gradually, which would, of course, take a long time under normal circumstances. But could the layers have been laid down rapidly? Well, Noah's flood gives us a mechanism where massive sedimentary layers would have been laid down all over the earth in a relatively short space of time. And we have modern evidence of exactly this happening. We have observed rapid formation of sedimentary layers. When Mount St. Helens in the USA erupted on the 18th of May 1980, one of the many surprising results was an 8-meter thick sedimentary deposit exposed in a cliff alongside the North Fork Turtle River. It's composed of finely layered sediment, and if we didn't know better, could assume that it had been laid down layer by layer over long periods of time, except we know that this whole deposit formed in just 3 hours. because it was observed. The Mount St. Helens eruption also demonstrated how canyons can be formed much faster than conventionally thought. The ongoing eruptions eroded the thick sediment dumped at the base of the volcano, producing channels and canyons. One of these channels, named the Little Grand Canyon, had side walls up to 40 metres high and a small stream running through it. Someone seeing that canyon might conclude that it was eroded slowly by the small creek now running through it over many hundreds or thousands of years. However, the formation of this canyon was documented. It was carved by a mud flow in a single day on the 19th of March, 1982. So the creek didn't cause the canyon. The canyon caused the creek. Other canyons on the flanks of the volcano show that it's not just softer material that can be eroded quickly. Lewitt Canyon, which is over 30 metres deep, was gouged in part through old, hard volcanic rock called andesite by mud flows in just a few months in the second half of 1980. So we have plenty of evidence that sedimentary layers can form quickly and can be eroded very quickly also. The real Grand Canyon is another amazing example where we can clearly see the various rock layers. You may not be aware that this is powerful evidence for rapid deposition of sedimentary rock. See how the lines between the layers are very flat and sharp. These supposedly represent gaps in time of millions of years. But if those surfaces had in fact been exposed for millions of years before the next layer was laid down, they wouldn't be flat. They would be heavily eroded by weather, tree roots, animal burrows, and so on. This picture shows the sharp, flat contact line between the Coconino sandstone above and the Hermit Shale below. There is supposed to be a 10 million year interval between these two layers of the Grand Canyon. But this contact can be seen extending for hundreds of kilometres with no sign of erosion between the layers. This is strong evidence that they were laid down rapidly. So while the idea of the Earth being around 6,000 years old may seem radical when we're constantly bombarded with millions of years, in fact, the majority of the scientific evidence indicates that the Earth is young, not millions of years old. So we've already looked at some geological evidence supporting the creation account in the Bible. Before we look at some more evidence, I just need to explain something about science. Not all types of science are equal. When most people think of science, they think of what we call operational science. Operational or experimental science is repeatable, it's measurable, there are well-defined laws that accurately predict outcomes. There's not much debate about this type of science. It's the sort of science that gives us cell phones and microwave ovens, sends rockets to the moon. Generally speaking, operational science provides us with lots of beneficial technologies, and it leads people to respect what scientists say. But when we talk about evolution or anything that happened in the past, it's not operational science. What we're dealing with here is historical or forensic science. This is not really repeatable or measurable because we weren't there. We can't repeat the Big Bang as an experiment or the spontaneous origin of life. We don't know the exact conditions or environment. We should remember what God said to Job, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth?" Some evidence will be available to us today, but it will be interpreted by a human. Both evolution and creation fall into this second category. So to reiterate, operational science deals with the present. It's observable. It's repeatable. This is the sort of science that underpins aviation, where there's no place for speculation or philosophical influences. It has to work. Note also that no one has ever found a conflict between the Bible and experimentation in operational science. But historical science, which is what we're discussing today, deals with the past. It's not observable or repeatable. This is an important distinction to make. And it's where worldviews really come into play. This explains why there can be such different explanations for the same evidence. Both evolutionists and creationists are observing exactly the same data or evidence, but coming to very different conclusions because of their different worldviews. One more thing about science. Science is investigative by nature. Ideas change as we learn more. And this isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's how it should be. But God's word doesn't change. It never has. It never will. It doesn't need to change because it's true. So never be tempted to place scientific thought above God's word. So let's take a look at some more evidence. First up, fossils. Fossils are often presented as evidence for evolution, but actually they give fantastic support to the Bible's history. Let's look at how fossils are formed. The story that we've all probably been told, and you'll find with a quick Google search, is that an animal dies in or ends up in a body of water, it sinks to the bottom, and over millions of years it's gradually covered by layers of sediment. Eventually it becomes a fossil, and it may be discovered when the sedimentary rock erodes away. Does that sound reasonable? It does, actually, until you think about what happens in real life. In real life, a dead animal in a marine environment doesn't just sit there untouched for years while sediment gradually covers it up. It's immediately set upon by the local carnivore club, who tear it apart and scatter the remains. It certainly doesn't remain in one piece long enough for sediment to cover it. And recent experiments have shown that even in the absence of predators, a body in water will disintegrate rather than remain in one piece. In reality, the only way to create a fossil is complete and rapid burial of the dead animal, excluding oxygen and preventing carnivores from making a meal of it. Now, millions of fossils have been found all over the world in rock laid down by water. Can you think of a historical event that might explain the rapid and complete burial of millions of animals all over the earth? Yeah, absolutely. The global flood of Noah's day provides the ideal explanation for what we now find in the fossil record. You need to understand that Noah's flood was not a benign raising of the water level after a lot of rain. This was an incredibly violent and catastrophic event with lots of volcanic and tectonic activity. This reshaped the surface of the whole planet. There would have been sediment flows on a massive scale all over the earth, well able to drown, bury and fossilize millions of animals. Other pieces of evidence that support this explanation of drowning and rapid burial are fossils that appear like a snapshot in time, showing animals like this fish in the middle of eating his lunch, or giving birth, like this ichthyosaur. I've heard of long labours, but millions of years? I don't think so. This is not what you would expect from a slow and gradual process. Also of interest is the arched back posture of many fossils that we now know as evidence of death by drowning. We've got a real fossil to pass around that you can have a look at today. This is a Phacops trilobite, which is an extinct marine arthropod. This specimen is called Doug. And the in the evolutionary story, trilobites are primitive creatures because they're found low in the fossil record. But we find that they possess some very advanced features. For example, compound eyes with advanced optical components found in modern creatures. So the detailed preservation of Doug is evidence that he was rapidly buried before scavengers could get to him. He was very likely fossilised in Noah's flood about 4,500 years ago. So you can touch something today that was most likely walking around as Noah loaded up the ark. The next piece of evidence I want to look at is genetics and mutations in particular. This is another area where the two histories are completely opposed. According to the evolutionary version, we have evolved uphill from simple life forms to more complex. So we are supposedly getting better over time. The Bible, however, indicates that at the very beginning, Adam and Eve were genetically pure. After they disobeyed God and the whole of creation was cursed, mutations began to increase to the point where now around 100 additional new mutations are added per person every generation. So what are mutations? Mutations are changes in our DNA, most commonly errors that occur when the DNA is being copied. Now, mutations are not good. They're responsible for thousands of inherited diseases and cancer. So if we inherit 100 new mutations every generation, as well as the existing mutations already present in our family line, we're not improving. We're actually going downhill. The modern discovery of genetic entropy, that we are carrying an ever-increasing number of mutations, is exactly the opposite of the evolutionary story, but aligns perfectly with the Bible, which tells us that our genetic golden age was in the past, at the beginning. We are now degrading or going downhill. And we see this as the number of mutations increases in each successive generation. So if you're a fan of shows like X-Men, I'm sorry to break it to you. Mutations don't give us superpowers. They give us diseases. This is also really powerful evidence for the shorter biblical time frame, because at the rate mutations are increasing in us, the human race would have become extinct many times over if we had in fact been around for a million years. Evolutionary geneticist Alexei Kondrashov asked, why aren't we dead 100 times over? And this overall downward trend is also strongly supported by the second law of thermodynamics. If you want to know more about that one, look it up on creation.com or talk to Mike afterwards. There is so much more evidence available in all the scientific disciplines that supports the Bible's history. If you want to see lots more evidence like this, check out the resource tables when we finish. Or go to creation.com. You'll be amazed at the wealth of information available there. I hope you're beginning to see that, armed with a bit of information, a few key concepts, it's very easy for you to get equipped with answers to the commonly asked questions about creation and evolution. Speaking of having good answers to the commonly asked questions, the two histories, creation and evolution, are very different with respect to the time frames, as we said before. A universe 6,000 years old versus 14 billion years old. 6 days versus millions of years for all life to develop. The number's not even close. Now, some people try to fit millions of years into the Genesis account. Has anyone heard of ideas like each day in Genesis represents millions of years? Yeah. There's lots of geological evidence for a young Earth, as we saw earlier, but there are also theological problems with the idea of millions of years of Earth history. Firstly, there is nothing in the language of Genesis that suggests or even allows that interpretation. People make the point sometimes that the Bible contains many varied writing styles. There is poetry, songs, symbolic writing, prophecy, letters, and so on. That's true. But the writing style of the early chapters of Genesis is very clearly literal narrative or history. Another significant issue is the sequence of events. First, the Bible tells us in Romans chapter 5 that the first appearance of death is only after Adam and Eve rebel against God. Prior to that, there was no death, no sickness, no disease, a world that is totally good. In any millions of years scenario, however, death and suffering are there from the very beginning of life, part of the creative process, and certainly part of the picture before Adam and Eve appear. So if we accept the evolutionary time frame, we end up with this image of a supposedly very good Garden of Eden sitting on top of a fossil record depicting death and suffering. Doesn't make sense. Secondly, in the evolutionary version, mankind appears near the end of history. In the biblical version, mankind is there near the beginning. The third issue with accepting evolution in millions of years is the damage done to major themes of the Bible. This is where we discover that this is not just an Old Testament issue. Take note here, this may be new for some of you. If we accept evolution in millions of years, we are in effect saying that Jesus was mistaken when he said, but at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female, in Mark 10:6. Remember how in the evolutionary version, people appear only near the end of history? Jesus said they were there at the beginning. The Apostle Paul must also have been in error when he said, for Adam was formed first, then Eve, in 1 Timothy 2:13. Even the linchpin of Christianity, Jesus' death and resurrection, no longer makes any sense if death wasn't the result of Adam's disobedience. Let me explain. The Bible's very clear that sin appeared and impacted the whole of creation because of the actions of one man, Adam. Romans 5:12 describes this. Therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man and death through sin. The Bible then describes a parallel process where the actions of one man, Jesus, described as the last Adam, was able to reverse the effects of sin on all mankind. Romans 5:18 says, consequently, just as one trespass resulted in condemnation for all people, so also one righteous act resulted in justification and life for all people. And 1 Corinthians 15:22 says, for as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive. This makes no sense if there was death, disease and suffering before Adam sinned. A further problem with accepting evolution in millions of years is that we have to accept that a supposedly good God used death and suffering as part of a creative process. So what we find is that any attempt to insert millions of years into the biblical narrative forces us to accept that Jesus was in error in what he said and that his death on the cross was pointless. Now please don't misunderstand me here. I'm not saying that accepting the biblical age of the earth is essential for people to be saved. But I really hope you can see that accepting evolution in millions of years brings us to a confused and contradictory history of the earth and makes a mess of the logical basis of the gospel. But taking the book of Genesis as it's written gives us a logical and consistent worldview that we can defend against skeptical attack. So I want to ask you a really important question. Are you willing to get equipped so that you're able to respond to questions and challenges about your faith? Are you willing to equip your family with answers to the questions that we know come up all the time? Questions about carbon dating, dinosaurs, missing links, ape men, how did all the animals fit on the ark, who was Cain's wife, how did the different races arise, how could a loving God allow suffering? People are looking for solid answers. There are far too many testimonies of people walking away from their faith because they couldn't get answers to these questions and they were told, you just need to believe. Back to Peter, who told us to always be prepared with answers. This is the reason that the Creation Ministries speakers lug around lots of books and DVDs and magazines and pamphlets. It's so that you can do your own investigating. It's so that you can get equipped. So that you can hear the side of the story that you're not going to get in most classrooms or from the Discovery Channel. So that you can hear from real scientists who have got real degrees, from secular universities who have been involved in real research. Scientists who have found that the biblical history is by far the best fit in explaining our universe and everything in it. I want to be really clear here. We are not providing resources to make money. We're a not-for-profit ministry. The primary aim of Creation Ministries is to help you get equipped with information and tools, able to show that God's word is true and trustworthy. If I could borrow from a colleague and put this in culinary terms, I would suggest to you that this talk is nothing more than an appetizer. The main meal is out on those resource tables. Don't underestimate the impact that you can have by getting hold of good information, digesting it, and passing it on. There's a battle going on over the hearts and minds of our families and friends, and we need to be armed. Stop for a moment and think, who in your world needs to hear this message? Who do you know that needs to be informed? Probably the most effective means to share this information is through Creation Magazine. I'm one of many people who would say that this magazine has changed my life. Has anyone here already received Creation Magazine? A few. Oh, quite a few. Awesome. Can you tell the rest how good it is? It's a powerful resource. It comes out 4 times a year. It's always visually stunning. It's suitable for a wide age range. There's always a kids section. And it carries no paid advertising. It's completely full of useful information. It's a great way to keep informed about the latest issues and discoveries. Creation Ministries receives many testimonies of the life-changing impact of this magazine. For example, a young scientist called Sonia had rejected Christianity, but a colleague both memorized and photocopied Creation Magazine articles and shared them for over 2 years. She says, "The process was interesting, and that once I realized that creation could have happened, thereby removing my evolutionary foundation and replacing it with the creation foundation, I then found it easy to accept the entire gospel message." By passing on a copy or even subscribing for someone else, you could be instrumental in that kind of change in their life. How amazing would that be? Additionally, the hard copy subscription to Creation Magazine now includes the digital version, which you can access on up to 5 devices. No steak knives, I'm sorry. But wait, there is actually more. If you subscribe today for a year, you get a free back issue, and a 3-year subscription will get you a free back issue and 2 sleeved DVDs. One is called Rapid Rocks. It gives lots of geological evidence for a global flood. The other one is the Fallout DVD I mentioned earlier about university and our young people leaving the church. This family magazine gives God the glory and gives you the answers to defend your faith. Another sign-up sheet's going to circulate now for those who wish to subscribe to Creation Magazine, and I really encourage you to do so if you don't already receive this amazing resource. Just fill out both parts of the sign-up sheet, tear off the stub, and bring it to the tables afterwards to collect your free gifts. I'm not exaggerating when I describe this magazine as life-changing. Many people continue to testify to that. Next, I'm just going to highlight a few of the other resources available here today. Creation Ministry's most popular book is the Creation Answers book that carries the answers to more than 60 of the most commonly asked questions about creation evolution in the book of Genesis. All the different questions I listed before are answered in this resource, and many more. In my opinion, this is a must for every coffee table. Great to just have sitting around as a handy resource. Virtually every question that will be asked in a forum like this has already been answered in the Creation Answers book. And pretty much any challenge thrown at you by a skeptic is covered in an understandable way. We carry child-friendly books as well. The Please Nana series include Please Nana, Who is God? And Please Nana, What is Death? These deal with difficult concepts in a child-friendly style. And the children's book pack is great value. 5 titles reduced from $90 to $54. Next, Refuting Evolution is a powerful book that deals with the main arguments for evolution used in schools and universities. Now, maybe you have concerns about young people struggling to do well at school in evolutionary topics if they learn about biblical creation. What we find is actually the opposite. One of our speakers reports, a couple of years ago, a young Facebook friend commented that he had been reading creation stuff for years, and it was a lot of fun. Matthew went on to say, "I've actually found that I'm acing biology, specifically evolution, because I seem to know more about it than my teachers." Matthew was excelling in his studies because he understood the scientific concepts. I hope you can see that exposure to this information really works, and it's not hard to find. The biblical explanation has such power, not only to explain what we see around us, but as people see that it makes sense, they're drawn towards Jesus and ultimately salvation. And that's what it's all about. There are many DVDs as well. And in case you don't have a means to play DVDs, we've now launched a video streaming feature on creation.com where you can rent or buy video content and stream it to your device or smart TV. The DVDs cover topics like why is there so much suffering if God created a very good world? Dinosaurs, an amazing witnessing tool supporting the Bible. Biology, I found this to be one of the most exciting areas as we discover more and more incredible things. Geology, astronomy, and many more. Today is a great opportunity for you. These resources are not available in schools or libraries, not even in many Christian bookshops. And finally, another reminder about the website, creation.com. All of this has been produced so that you and your family can get informed, equipped, excited about the truth of the Bible, and able to confidently deal with any questions that come your way. I'm living proof that you don't need to be a scientist to get a good understanding of these issues. People like you and I can really impact our culture. So to round it all off, I want to return to the three big questions we considered at the beginning. Where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going next? Remember how our answers to questions 2 and 3 depend on our answer to question 1. Well, if the Bible is correct about what it tells us about question 1, that we were deliberately designed, created by an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving God, then it's only sensible that we look at questions 2 and 3 and consider, what does the Bible say about them? Regarding the question, why am I here? The Bible, which is described as a love letter from God, all the way through, tells us that God created us to be the recipients of his love, that we were designed to love him back and to know him intimately and to live a life of purpose, fulfillment, and excitement. Regarding the question of where am I going next, the Bible also gives us a very clear answer. Remember how good the world was before the entry of death and suffering brought on by sin. God promises restoration to a similar state, but even better, the complete removal of all pain, suffering, disease, and death in a place of intense joy and peace in his close presence forever. It sounds amazing, doesn't it? Adam and Eve had the choice of obeying God and remaining in a perfectly good paradise, or rejecting him and experiencing the pain and suffering that were never intended for them. We all face that same choice today. Jesus, when he died on the cross, he reversed the effects of Adam's disobedience, and he made a way, the only way, for us to be reunited with God, now and into eternity. The Bible describes how sin entered the world due to the actions of one man, the first Adam, and also how sin and death were defeated completely by the actions of one man, the last Adam, Jesus. We can't earn our way into heaven by being good. We'll never be good enough. We need to respond to Jesus. If this is something you haven't done yet, I really encourage you. Keep searching, keep asking, keep investigating. So to close, I want to suggest to you that the Bible is completely consistent with what we observe in the world around us. It is not opposed by science. It's true. We can trust it with our lives. Returning once again to the challenge in 1 Peter 3 to always be prepared. This is so easy for us today. There's so much information available. Really encourage you to have a look at the resources available afterwards. Find something that you can take away and digest at your leisure. Just don't forget the last part of 1 Peter 3, which counsels us to talk to people with gentleness and respect. This is such an exciting era for Christians, as more and more scientific discoveries are made that so powerfully support what God has said all along. Again, I want to encourage you to keep learning, keep getting better prepared to answer the questions and challenges that will come your way. Don't be this guy. Mike and I will be available afterwards if there are issues or questions you want to talk through. If you prefer, talk to your church leadership. Asking questions is a really healthy habit. Always be prepared. Thank you for listening. You made it.